ました。エニシアキャンチ。ゴールド。
Hi, I'm Neil and welcome to a festive crosscast. Yes, we know you wait months for a show and then three come along all at once. Well, you can join the buses today because we've had such an exciting few races. We're really excited about them. We've watched them again and we thought, less time to talk about it. So we're going to have a fluid and a bit of a dynamic show. So it might be a little bit guerrilla, as Matt likes to say, but basically what we want to do is just to have a chat through some of the things that have happened over the last few days. Now, Matt, I saw you again on the Donny Chain Gang. We're almost there for Christmas. We're sneaking in a show. We're going to be really busy, I think, aren't we?
We are, and we were aiming on having a break on the Donny Chain Gang, so I've been broadcasting that on a Tuesday and Thursday, as well as running the Facebook pages and all of the information on there. And what we've actually done, we're going to sneak in a couple of specials. So we've got a Women's Only special, which I better give a plug for. Which is for women only on the Donny Chain Gang. We've got some fantastic riders, people like Mary Wilkinson already signed up on there. I know a lot of the Drops team are coming, a lot of the Finish Line Racing team are coming. We've got lots of Mansfield, of course, with us, and all the rest of the riders on there. And like the normal Donny Chain Gang, it's a ride for everybody, so we're going to be staying together for about half of it, covering all the riders, not just the star riders, but it is your chance to ride with the pros. We've got some very special guests lined up, if it all works out. But it's a bit like this show. We dropped it in because people wanted it, and we are very fluid and dynamic with it at the moment. We've also got an end on the high, so lots on there, and of course lots of cross to watch, which has been exciting. I've really loved the last few races. I don't know about you, but I seem to spend most of my time watching reruns of racing.
Yeah, you know, when you get this, it's like this every year. I was in Belgium this time last year, actually, but every year before that, you're going to get this sequence of watching the races.
It has been classic cross conditions over on the continent.
It has. It's classic. The races we saw last year, this time last year, were also really mixed in their conditions, actually. We had some, and we've seen the Namur race, which was really muddy and perhaps not quite as muddy as we have seen it in the past, but even so, average mud at Menor.
Menor? You can tell if you're listening to this. This is Neil and I doing a recording first thing in the morning. There is extreme amounts of coffee being used to keep us going this morning. So at Namur, it was an average amount of mud. For me, there were a number of standout things on there. If you haven't watched the racing, watch it. Turn off the crosscast, watch it, and then come back and listen to the rest of the show, because it is epic. It's brilliant racing. It has reaffirmed my enjoyment of the cross, I have to say. And I thought it was one of the best races, men's and women's, for a while. There were a few take-home things, not least of which is that the cable cam had gone. And Neil is going to be distraught, I know. He's going to be in counselling for it. But it was a drone rather than a cable out at Namur. How are you feeling about that, Neil?
Oh, I'm quite happy with that, to be honest. There were some great shots. With some of those aerial shots, the ones which went onto that really wide angle, you saw so much of the course, and you really saw how it fitted together. I thought that was fantastic, actually. Some of those ones where you can see the elevation changes, you can see the local, the words, you can see the buildings and the architecture. You really get a feel for what the place is like. I thought that was amazing, and hopefully we'll see a lot more of that. The other thing which I think is probably the only thing we need to say for the rest of the show was, actually I can't remember, what was it? Who did I tip to potentially podium?
Would it have been Clara Hunsinger by any chance?
Yeah, I think last time we said that that Brand was likely to win it, and I think I put in that I thought Hunsinger had a really good chance that this could be a step up to the podium. It was quite funny. I didn't watch that race live. I watched the men's race live, and I watched that one. In fact, we were driving back from a race, actually, on Sunday. The first thing that came to me, that was said to me when I got home, was, you tipped Clara Hunsinger, didn't you?
No spoilers or anything when you walked in the door then. No. I thought it was great. Yeah, I've got to give it to you, Neil. She showed why she is such a talent on what is a very tough course. I thought she didn't really make any mistakes. I think maybe just lacked a little bit of power versus somebody like Brand up there. And I thought Brand was yet again showed why she is always going to be favourite on that course when she's riding, unless she's pretty much in a plaster cast, I think, because she was really, really good up there. I really liked her racing, her style, the power, the control. She didn't panic anywhere, and I thought it was really good to watch. On the flip side, one rider who I didn't like watching is Betsema, who is clearly, if social media is to be believed and some of the footage is correct, is fast turning into the villain of the women's cyclocross scene. Irrespective of what happened with her chemist or a pharmacy, some of those tricks, there was elbows, there were grabs of wheels, apparently, to pull herself up on other people. There's a lot of cutting across and shutting doors on people. Maybe she's just settled into that role, and if I'm, you know, maybe she's just thinking, well, if I've got this role, I'm just going to play it to the full. But I must admit, didn't enjoy watching her, which is, for somebody who's quite an aggressive attacking rider, for me, it says something, because normally I like the riders who bring the racing on. But yeah, I have to say, I can't imagine it's going to be long till she's going to get taken out or get a ban.
Well, let's see. I mean, she is certainly not popular after her ban, her previous ban, to say the least. Certainly amongst, let's say in the UK, that's certainly the case, but does seem to be a bit more accepted elsewhere. But riders, you know, there are always riders out there. There's always the villain rider all the time, and people wax and wane in that. You know, you can go back in, even on the road, there are people who, people like Sagan. Yeah, who at one point, if you remember at the start of Sagan's career, you know, he's very much mellowed over the years and has become much more of a popular rider. But you get these riders, and they can play up to that role, and you see it. I didn't see any of like the wheel grabbing, that type of thing. But if it was another rider, you'll think, no, that won't be the case. But with Betsema, she's got the reputation. You think, yeah, this is potentially, certainly plausible, to say the least. If riders are saying it, then probably I can imagine that it is happening. And you get it everywhere, from your local leagues right the way through to internationals. There are riders, and you know they are more aggressive than others. You know there are some where you don't go for that 50-50 move, where, no, it is 50% you and 50% the other person, because you know that person is going to be elbows out and they're going to just shut the door on you. And it happens everywhere. Yeah,
but there's been close to the line. I probably ought to hold my hand up here and admit that I was very, very close to the line regularly. I'm not the littlest rider in a bunch, and I think if I go into a corner with somebody else, I always fancy my chances much more than theirs. Even if they end up in a hedge, it's not really my worry. I just kind of like doesn't even register when I'm racing. However, you don't deliberately go out to do that, and I think some of those moves were a bit close. I think we say it goes everywhere, but I haven't seen anybody in the men's field. And certainly in the men's race, it was full of heroes for me. Tom Pidcock's move, going off the front, repeatedly attacking in Namur, I think for me was real hero stuff. I thought that was brilliant racing, and it really put the wind up Van der Poel. It put the wind up Van Aert. They've raced against each other regularly, but I think it was a real wake-up call for people when Tom went on the offensive and actually held it for so long. And maybe if Van Aert hadn't done as much, I thought the post-race interviews were almost as interesting as the race.
Yeah.
Tom saying, this is my style of racing. Well, Van Aert saying, maybe I did too much work and I should have concentrated on winning the race and not just getting Tom back. And Van der Poel was sat on the floor looking very, very ill because of the amount of effort he put in, and hardly able to string two words together, a bit like us this morning.
Yeah. But Van der Poel was making mistakes. He was making a lot of mistakes. To the extent we started counting them, we were reckoning he was making two obvious mistakes, you know, which were mistakes. It wasn't just a slip out. But every lap, He was making a couple of mistakes. And then about half distance, he kind of got his rhythm and got his flow. And that's when you saw things come together. Now, I don't think that it was his legs, actually, in terms of the power, that when he started to be on the front and attack, I think it was he calmed down and stopped making mistakes.
Yep. You saw Andre van der Poel at the side actually putting instructions in and shouting into Matthew when he was racing. And it may well be that was one of the things. Sometimes you just need somebody outside that bubble. You get your head down, you start making those mistakes, you then start worrying more. It's self-perpetuating. And then you get somebody from outside will put a shout in, and that will wake a rider up. I know it has done for me when I've been in and on the bike before, and they've gone, look up! Relax.
Yeah.
Ride faster. That's the usual one. And that.
Yeah, well, you get that. People shout that to every rider, no matter what their age is. But it's sometimes for some people that actually works. You know, other people it doesn't, and it's finding out what does make it work. You know, some people you hear the you hear it being shouted. I'll tell you a story about this in a second. You hear it being shouted at, you know, to calm down, slow down. Other people, it's attack, attack. Other people, it's concentrate. And there was a very memorable occasion where we were racing. It wasn't actually in Wales, but one of the very well-known Welsh riders. Of course, there is one word that everyone in Great Britain knows because it's painted on all the roads, which is araf. In Wales, every time it says slow, and it was very funny where one of the Welsh riders, I won't mention the names, but you could probably guess, and there was the pit crew and the dad actually was shouting out, "Araf, araf," and everyone then looked at each other and said, "That means slow down." So it was really funny, yeah. So in some ways, yeah, you can have your secret codes. Which in that case it wasn't so secret of so people do get does get that information, and I must admit, you know, in riders that I've worked with, you know, there have been secret codes so that you can give information to someone if they're in a bunch which may be important to them. In that race, I mean, one of the things I must admit I was really pleased about was that Thomas Mayne finished on the lead lap, had a finish where I imagine it wasn't one of his best results. So I know it wasn't one of his best results. However, that's been I think that was actually a good milestone because he's had some shockers there in the past. Ben Turner was just outside the top 20. But the most impressive thing that I saw from any British rider, British team probably, on that day, which really stood out to me, was, did you see how brightly white the sidewalls were on Tom Pidcock's bike? I almost had to turn down the contrast on the TV. It was like eye-burningly bright and white. I thought, wow, that is that's a real statement of how you have no respect for the mud. You're going out with these day glow.
And I really like it because it's really easy to spot when he's got a new bike as well, because all of a sudden there's this ching, and you think, yep, new bike. And then, you know, when he's ridden it for a little bit, he's dulled it down a little bit. You can see better. But yeah, definitely an interesting move, and definitely for those who've got plenty of pit crews and are prepared to have people to clean the bike all the time for them, that's for sure. I'm not sure I want them.
Yeah, I think you're right. The other one we saw after, we're going to go through all the races, they've all been brilliant actually. We then moved on from Namur to Essen, which was at Robot Land. which I kind of was hoping there'd be more robots visible rather than sort of eco cars. You know, as much as I'm.
I think we have to be careful about what's lost in translation here, because it is Diggerland, really. Robotics and mechanical manipulation of things and mechanical action is slightly differently interpreted. So our idea of Robot Land in the UK would be a whole load of automatons rolling around, you know, like Cybermen across the theme park. Whereas if you've got Robot Land over in, and on the continent, then it's more like Diggerland here in the UK. And I think in the States it's the same as well. So, yeah, it is. I mean, it looked fun. Don't get me wrong, if you want to just go play with a whole load of plant. But I must admit, it wasn't the most inspiring of venues for a cross race.
Wasn't it so disappointing? If I was paying to go to Robot Land, I would want it to be a much more inspiring, nice place than...
So, I mean, there was like an old train carriage in the background which just said Robot Landed, and I'm thinking, well, yeah, okay, this is... It's not exactly, you know, state-of-the-art robotics, but I think there was some interesting use of the features out there, and they did a lot with some of the things that are just nothing. Some of the bumps and lumps and bumps and turns over corners on cambers were really good. The concrete slabs... just because you're going to go on the way around some electric cars, not my idea of fun. I thought that was very, very risky indeed. And I didn't actually see anybody go down, but what you did see was the pace come off the race, and it slowed it down in a way I think that was a little bit false.
Yeah. But I think the key thing for me on that day was we had Marianne Vos come back. Again, we previewed it in the last show. Yeah, she is one of the only riders, I think, who can come back and win on a first outing coming back. And it was, yeah, that's exactly what happened. She came back, took that win. As she worked her way up, you could just see she was just being calm, went on.
She was.
Yeah.
She was. But in a year of conspiracy theories, let me throw this one at you. So, Vos was the first winner of the Essen women's race. Vos is paid appearance money at the Essen women's race. She's also a favourite of the Essen women's race. Vos goes to the front of the race, hits the front. Next time they hit the line, the bell goes, and they run a 40-minute race. Minimising the time, were the commissaires there? Well, they're supposed to be impartial, but we all know that commissaires have a lot of voices telling them how long the race should be, including us. But they have commentators, they have team mechanics, they have race managers, they have the race organisers quite often, as well as the sponsors going, oi, let's have it 6 laps, 7 laps, 7:15. Maybe it was a short race because Vos went to the front. Vos knew she was going to do a shorter effort coming in, and that's why the distance came down to 40.
I don't buy your conspiracy theory at this time. If I remember rightly, do correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think that that race, the laps were really long. I think that they only did 4 laps at Essen. Which means...
They were long, yeah.
Yeah,
go on.
4 laps. So they have to choose the race time on the, when is it, second lap? So the second time passed. So the first time passed, they get the time. The first time passed the finish, you get the time for that first lap, and then the commissaires calculate how many laps the race is going to be, and that will be shown the second time past the start finish. Well, if you've got 2 10-minute laps, and I did,
we're aiming for 50 minutes. Even my maths, and I'm rubbish at maths. Well, everybody will tell you, 10-minute gaps means 5 laps, 50 minutes. A 40-minute race. The bell rang at 31 minutes.
And they were...
The bell rang at 31 minutes. So on a 10-minute lap, okay, that would take you to 51, and it needs to be 40 to 50, so technically get it under. Was I surprised it was a Belgium race? No. Was I surprised it was Essen? No. However,
doesn't detract from
your point of Vos, she was
something else. I'm going to pause here because... Before we move on, because I know the hate I will get by even making any defence of why it was under 40 minutes. I'm not saying it is correct that it was that time. What I'm saying is I don't necessarily buy the conspiracy theory quite the same way.
And you think it's human stupidity.
It was stupidity rather than conspiracy. I am not saying it should have been a 39-minute race. And I won't go any further because... all you have to do is to mention this, and you get trolled.
Indeed.
But the point is, you know, it was the race was 39 minutes 45. You know, the first three came over the line in under 40 minutes. Yeah,
it was too short.
Yeah, so it was definitely too short. If they're running 10 minute laps, or if just under 10 minute laps, then it should have been another lap. I'm going to go back and have another look, because I thought it was just over 10 minute laps early on, and then the race sped up. But I mean, whatever, it should be close to 50. Yeah. And I'm going to go and also have another look to check to see if the number of laps on the lap board jiggled.
Don't forget,
at any
you're
point.
Meant to be going out and doing 3 hours on the bike today, Neil.
Yeah, that is true.
Go look at it tonight. So let's leave behind the wonderful controversy of race distance.
What about the wonderful controversy of what on earth is going on with people's chains this year? Or what's going on? What's going off with them? I mean, Easabeat lost their chain at Namur. Yara Castellane dropped the chain at Essen and then couldn't unjam it, couldn't release it, and then got some coaching from the side. And then you mustn't get assistance from the because you can't get assistance from the side, just to try to. And then even the mechanic couldn't, or whoever it was who was trying to help, couldn't release that chain.
I think it was really interesting to see where it came off. If you watch the replays repeatedly, you can see that essentially it's on a rutted descent. It just a drop down and then a compression, and she's got the chain on the biggest sprocket, so it's under the most tension, and when it gets off the chain ring and it drops in between there and the frame, it jams. Now, but she wasn't running a chain catcher on there at all, and I know it might be another 28 grams on the bike, but if your chain comes off, it's game over if you can't get it out the back. And it was clearly obvious that she couldn't pull it out. I thought she was very calm, really, to say that she was in such a problematic situation that it was jammed, she couldn't remove it. She wasn't in tears. We've seen riders before now in floods of tears. We've seen them throwing bikes everywhere. She was just frustrated. And I think the point you make about assistance is really interesting, because it escalated from being verbal coaching at the side, which you're allowed, you're not actually getting physical assistance. And when I've asked commissaires for guidance on this, when I've been commentating on the racing, their guideline usually is the moment that the rider or the bike is touched, it's a DQ. So you can mime it, you can do charades about it, you can pull somebody else's bike apart right next to them. What you can't do is touch them or the bike. And that happened in the end, and I saw she come out of the race, but at that point, there was no way she was going to get it back anyway. She wasn't gaining anything by riding. Why is it happening? Don't know. I'm not a single ring fan, I must admit. I think not having something over the top of the chain ring, very, very risky. Very, very risky. If you're going to run single ring, which we do on some of our bikes, put the chain catcher on there. There's loads out there, and you can get one that's going to hold it pretty much no matter what.
Yeah, okay. That's one side of it. I agree. Chain catchers, we always run them, have done. We use them, what they call the dog fang type, we used to use all the time. Weighs nothing, costs not very much, and really, really effective. And yeah, it's one of those things you never know when it works, you only know when it doesn't work, because it saves you so much. What I don't like about them is it means that some people can have bikes set up and with really bad setups, and the chain catcher catches it literally every shift, which I've seen before. But I'm going to come back to my sort of design bit here, because I think this is a predictable, this is normal. I would say, that isn't a mistake. It's not it happened. It happens. No, that isn't a mistake from the user in that case. They've not done something which they shouldn't have done. They were riding their bike, the chain came off and it got jammed. And I've got some bikes that are terrible for this. If the chain drops off, it's a right pain to release it. It just gets jammed. And I think that's a normal, predictable failure mode for this system to go into. And it should not be like that. It should not be designed like that. It should be designed so that if it does drop in there, you can just pull it out very cleanly, quickly. Because that could have been a race. That was a race-winning design flaw, a race-losing design flaw, potentially.
I think we've got to remember that there are a myriad of combinations of chain rings, spider designs, bottom bracket designs, chainstay designs, all of which, as well as the size of the chain ring, are going to affect the dynamics of that chain coming off, going in and getting jammed. And it may well be that in all of that, there's only one configuration. And it may well be that the riders on particular teams with, let's say, one particular manufacturer of chain ring spider and one particular manufacturer of frame in a certain size as well, which does change the dynamics as well, is going to change it. And that then changes it to the worst and it jams. I agree with Neil. Come on, guys, get it together. This is professional sport. This is a top-level sport.
There should be...
needs more communication. Do it. Yeah, I would get all of ours out with a fingertip.
Yeah, and what you say there about all these combinations, I mean, it's the bane of our lives, isn't it? All these different standards, bottom brackets, everything else. And you know, but but it's there should be specification. It should be a spec if you design to this specification. Anyway, I'm going off on
any trolling that you got, Neil, regarding race distance by mistake, you've more than made up for because you just won everybody's hearts by saying we need a standard of frame and bottom bracket.
Yes,
and
we do
on that one, definitely.
Speaking of standards, the standard was reformed again with Van der Poel taking the win in the men's race. He looked like he was kind of easing up a bit at the end of that. Well, I mean, you're going to go on about my man crush again here, aren't you? With this fake chase back, try to get that podium, which you've got Pidcock who came in third. I mean, Hermans we've come on to, but Pidcock's look over his shoulder when they were coming up close to the finish and seeing Speke, who was still trying to get the podium there. And it was also, you could do a bit of a looking into his eyes, and you could see in his eyes was, oh, just stop it. You know, I'm going to have to go again.
Yeah, will you stop chasing, for God's sake? Yeah, I must admit, Speke is looking better these last couple of races. They are more his type of races. When you come off Namur and you move into Essen, you move into this cursed period, you've got ones that are more favourable for Sweet's riding style, his physiology. And I think his head goes up, his centre of gravity goes down, he's more flexible in his body, he looks smoother. He's just hitting everything smoother. And it is in his head, I think. And he is.
Yeah, coming back from
rider.
A puncture. Coming back from a puncture there, I think there was a bit of frustration in there as well. But I think Hermans was this wasn't the top level of race, and there were a lot of people who weren't there, but Hermans grabbed that with two hands, I thought, and Hermans took the opportunity riding for Tormans, and you know, what a fantastic result for him, coming in second, and a strong second. It wasn't like everything aligned on the day. He's ahead of Pidcock's fake the top five. You know, if you take, you know, you've got Van Aert, but yeah, I think you would say those with everyone else there, and he came in with a really, really good ride. And I wonder if it was one where this was potentially a target.
I don't think so. I mean, it's not been a meteoric rise this season particularly. He's been getting there steadily over the seasons. He's improved this season, all through the season. And I think for me it shows that he's got his timing right and he's improving. And, I mean, it leads us in nicely into the next race as well, where he came second on the podium on the race at Essen. And then we move on again. And only yesterday, he was racing, and he was racing up there. I think it was a top five result for him again.
I said the target.
He was smooth. He was looking good.
He won Essen last year.
Yeah.
So this was, I think, yeah, it was a race. You know, he doesn't get a lot of wins in his career. And so winning last year at Essen could mean this is a good one to target for him. But yeah, I didn't like that course, I have to say. I took it. The mud just looked horrible mud. It wasn't that fun mud that you could ride in. It just looked yucky.
I think it's high on my list of races I'm not going to make very much effort to go to.
So at Herentals, so many things that we can pull out from there. You know, some really happy results, I thought, was probably the order of the day. We've got the winner of the men and the women's race. It's probably had elation and relief all at the same time for not only the result, but the order that they were in. If we take the women's race first, then we got those really deep puddles. We can talk about the course as well, but the deep puddles throughout, the most mixed course you can possibly get. They were riding on what looked like an incredibly expensive running track. Which I can't imagine you'll get anywhere in the UK or anywhere else, to be honest.
It looked a very similar surface to the one at the Olympic Stadium that I worked on, and it looked the very, very same. And yeah, very expensive running track, but it's not always the best thing to ride around. I've ridden around one, and it wasn't the best of moments I've had on a bike.
Yeah, but speaking of tracks, there was a race I did at Beaumont Leeds in Leicester a long time ago. I think it was a cross race. Yeah. And that actually had a bit of the course that went round the cycle speedway track. And that's so much more appropriate.
but equally scary as well, that is for sure.
So we've got Alvarado who comes in to take the win now. I thought it was a nice dominant win, actually. I thought she kind of got her head back into where it should be. But ahead of Brand, ahead of Bessemer at the finish, and that I thought was really a cracking result. Hunsinger again coming back, overtaking important riders. You look at what's happened on the 4, 5, 6 here. You've got Hunsinger ahead, still with an amazing run of four, ahead of Kant, ahead of Voss.
So I think it was, I think it was really, for me, a race where people who are used to the new style of cross courses and racing and extreme racing are there. It was Vivekan's new course. They've all looked at this big hill and thought it would make a great cross race. I did think it was a bit narrow in places. It was really good at splitting the riders up with Salem riding all the way to the top repeatedly. Brand was the fastest down the straight descent by miles. Her descending down there was amazing. I mean, honestly, it was just point and shoot. No overthinking it. Straight down, let the bike flow, deal with the corner at the bottom. But then on the descent, which was a sharp turn, the bar she goes. Yeah,
that's got a name. That's called the heebie-jeebie corner.
Heebie-jeebie corner. It was, for me, that showed Saline's mountain biking ability about getting her weight back and rolling it round. Brand's position on a bike is much more roady in a lot of ways. It seems very stretched out, and maybe that contributed to the fact that she had too much weight at the front. She went over the bars, too much brake, which, however it is there, she ended up on the floor, but she picked herself back up again and she was motoring, and it certainly didn't stop her. She was still quick coming down the fast descents after that in the race. And then you look behind, Sanna, for me, putting in a great race. Sanna Camp doing an amazing job on, okay, it's a fairly local course, but then you've got Voss relatively struggling on something that may well have suited her, because it was very on-off, gas it, sprint it, stop, gas it, sprint it, stop. So real differences in there. I'm not sure the course was too MTB. Me, I'd love that. I've got a venue that I would love to put that style of racing and that style of course in, but is it good for all of the race field? Not so sure. It might be, it's just too extreme.
But you compare that to some of the other, even places like Robotland. You know, they give you that real variation from race to race. And I think I've said it this season, I say it every year, but what I like about cross, what I love about cross, is you have that really broad set of skills that are needed to who can ride the best over the whole season in dry, dusty, fast, who can ride the best in the woods when it's flowy, when it's not flowy, who can do the Namur race where it becomes really technical and is scary. right the way through to hopefully racing in snow and ice. And I'd like to see one of those every year. Yeah, so you, it is that real breadth. I didn't think it was, I didn't think it was too bad, but the emphasis on there is too. I think there was a real, there was a heebie-jeebie descent and a heebie-jeebie corner where it would have given me the heebie-jeebies for sure. Riding those in practice, probably it's one of those ones where once you're in the race and it's kind of breaks off, you know, you're in the zone, it will feel a lot better. So let's move to a race of a few years ago, actually. Let's reminisce back in, when was it been? 2018, I think, back in 2018. And there was
all that
this,
long ago.
Well, January, I think, February, January or February, I think it might be 1st of February 2018, there was World Championships, which was won by Valkenburg, won by Wout van Aert. Second there was Matthew van der Poel. And that was the last time that Wout won a race ahead of Matthew van der Poel.
Wow. That is a scary thought, isn't it? I mean, I loved it. I would love watching Wout go there. I mean, okay, Matthew had a puncture. You know, he had a bike problem. But to a large degree, punctures are part of the game. They're part, like we said, with the chain coming off. It is a predictable part of cross. You know whether there are roots, rocks, submerged rocks, whether you've got big descents, curb edges, gravel, whether you're going to go through thorn bush areas. You know whether you're likely to get a puncture, what your pressure should be, how hard you can run them. And if you can't do that as world champion, you know how close you're running to that line. That's not unfortunate. That is just part of the game for
me. I'm not
and
sure.
He that, should have dealt with that.
I'm not sure that he had the puncture before the overtaking manoeuvre.
Well,
it was,
no.
It was, and because we can say that, I don't believe that he lost the place because of the puncture. It's certainly in other races, in other seasons, he's been pretty much invincible. Yeah, he even if he does puncture, he's still easily able to come through. He's been so dominant, and it's part of the game, part of the sport. That is what you expect. There's nothing unusual about it. When I was watching it, I thought that the overtake move had happened a little time before the puncture. Of course, I mean, that wouldn't have helped on making it easy to chase back. But what was different this time was that body language. No, you had the body language at the end of Namur, where there was the person that won looked the most broken out of everyone, like they were having some serious, some serious questioning of their whole life. Even though they'd won it. And it looked the same here at Herentals.
Yeah, I think that's what we love about sport, though. We love how much they invest, how much our riders are involved, how much they care, how passionate they are, how much of themselves they give. And you can see that on the finish lines. You see that as they come across the line. And you could see, for me, Wout van Aert clearly loved the fact that he come across that line first. And Matthew the same. I mean, I think Matthew at Namur, it was to scoop him up and put him in a cocoon job, but that's what he wanted. He wanted to go cuddle up somewhere in the warm and stay out of the way of everybody for a bit. And that's what we love. That for me is what cross is all about, and why cross beats riding on the track or anywhere else, because there's so many variables. And we throw it in the mix, I think, particularly this year where people are isolated and maybe not experiencing as much as they would do normally. Watching cross, and particularly the races that have started to come through, really have got that variation of emotion and engagement that helps everybody.
And
you've got riding.
And it's that when you understand the details of it, when you kind of dig in, you can see races within races. You know, the significance of a Van Aert ahead of Van der Poel is huge. The significance of Van Turenhout, who was racing as if he was racing for the win, even though he was in third. But actually, maybe he was actually racing for the win of the series. Remember, this is based on time. And so even though it looked like he was, you know, he was as if he was trying to chase down, I don't think that was realistic for him. But he was going for the time gap. In the end, Iserby and Aerts also seemed to be very aware of that. who were also going hard at the finish. And so Vatuinhout took some time out of the overall, not enough time out of the overall, perhaps as to make it, you know, make an immediate difference now. But at the end of the season, that could be really important few seconds. The other one which I noticed with this race was, so often we have this, you know, we roll out the same old phrases about new generation, young riders, you know, under 23s being so strong. The first under 23 here, Ryan Camp, okay, obviously quality rider, 11th. So had no under 23s in that top 10. Tom O'Main was 12th. So it was this time it was the more experienced riders who are coming strong. I wonder if that's because they're able to cope with this sequence of races a bit better.
I think so, but also it is about how you deal with the unexpected. You know, I don't think it's just the sequence and the endurance. I think it is also about that something new, something different, something that is really, really out there. And I thought that's what this course was. And I do think the season has an effect on it. We are in the busiest period and we've seen riders missing. But there certainly wasn't that, I think, particularly at Herentals. And I thought it was a good race. I thought it had the potential to be a really, really good World Cup race. It does need better preparation, though. There was a few things in there, people getting caught in branding, bits of rope, posting not necessarily the right place. I think it's got the ability to step up, definitely, and it'd be really interesting to see that in big pit areas and nice tarmac. I think there's a little bit in there where people are going, this will suit us, we'll put this as a, you know, I think there's some ambition to have a World Cup there. If there isn't, there should be, that's for sure.
Yeah. So just before we move into the last round, let's have a look at where we are with the standings. So as we're talking about this race, for the X20 series, what was the DVV, it's Izabeet, van der Haar and Aerts, the top three there. With Vatuinhout, we were just talking about, just behind in fourth place. A big gap from Izabeet into second. 2.5 minutes he's got over van der Haar, so he's looking strong there. In the women's category, then it's Brand, as you'd expect. Brand, Betsema, then Castellane, who's in third. And then in the Super Prestige, it's really close at the top there. There's only a couple of races left. There's Zolder and Middelkerke. So Zolder coming up in a few days' time. And Izabeet is leading the series ahead of Aerts. Only 4 points in it, with Vatuinhout in third place. Let's look at the women in the Super Prestige. Brand, Alvarado, Betsema. Again, perhaps no surprises there. But again, really, really close at the top there. So there's really important here that the series overall are going to be decided, potentially decided at Zolder in just 2 days' time. And then the final series is, of course, the World Cup. And the World Cup, Vatuinhout, winning the first round. not so good in the second round, but Vatuinhout, Van Aert, and Aerts are the top three. And then in the women's series in the World Cup, Brand, Alvarado, Betsema yet again. So we've got the same top three from the women across pretty much everything. And just while we're talking World Cup, I'd just like to remind everyone that we also have Thomas Main leading the men's under 23, and I think that's the only one of them. And then the women's junior, of course, got Zoe Baxter. So good British road, good British set of results there across the World Cup overall.
It's going to be very interesting to see what they do. Are we going to have, like we had in the UK, a national series one in one round? Or are we going to see a composite? Because we have had these riders then taking part in the elite race. So are they then going to combine points in some kind of weird hybrid? I don't know. It'd be very interesting to see how that plays out and what decisions made there.
Well, the Overijse race is still, I think it's still open to question, but I don't think that it's likely that that's going to happen. Let's go a bit more domestic. I mean, there's no surprise here, I think, from anyone. But now it is official that the UK National Championships is cancelled altogether this year. I was thinking, hoping, wondering, speculating whether it would be possible to actually have a national champs. I guess it would have to be a kind of an unofficial type of thing, but maybe September 2021, because the 2020, it would still be a 2021 championships. But yeah, it's let's just reset. I think if we are able to reset, I think I'd rather just forget about this altogether and then move into kind of as normal as possible next year.
I think there are some questions to be asked. There are a number of nations that are holding national champs. There's a number of nations that aren't. And even under the current guidelines, elite sport still is able to run, even in the most severe restrictions. So there is an argument to be made that there should still and could still be an elite national championships, certainly in the UK. However, the way that our funding model, our volunteer-driven events, and the way we get our events funded by entries doesn't work here in the UK. And to cancel it means that we've got a runover of the champions from the previous year, which is fine. I don't have any issues with that. The question is, should we have done it earlier? To my mind, should we have had leadership, or should we have reactive movement to the conditions in the cross? And I think that's something that's going to be picked over at a later date when we get out the other side and people are going to be looking at how we move forward. We've got the opportunity maybe to change how we look at and how we put on events and how we go forward with our elite sport and support our riders into that. So I think there's time for people to think, because we're going to be running in, and time to look at whether we draw a slightly different picture of how we run cross across the globe.
Yeah, but I think you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So there isn't a right answer to this. There is no correct thing to do, especially when things are changing so rapidly. Yeah, exactly. Rapidly. Yeah, I had entered a race recently, and then all the tiers changed. So UK, it's different areas where you live, it's different restrictions. The tiers changed, and I was not allowed to race. And it's not only affects me; it affects the organizer as well. I mean, from a entry fees, do they return the fees? Do they keep them? They've got to stay viable. Yeah, it's what a nightmare for any organizer. I think any organizer is very brave to take anything on at the moment, and all credit to those who are trying to do what they can within the rules. And again, you're damned if you don't. So we're all going ahead, trying to do what we can in a huge amount of uncertainty. But looking ahead, let's move into the Laster Ronde. So coming up, let's tell you, I don't like doing this because it means that we are hostage to what you say, but hopefully we're going to get another show out before the new year, before Bredener, Baal, and so on. That's our promise. But what we've got coming up, we've got Zolder. We gave a bit of a course preview in the last show, so I'm going to refer you back to Zolder preview in the last show. And then we've got Dendermonde. Now, Matt, I think that you know an incredible amount about Dendermonde, so take us through their course.
Right, okay, so the incredible amount of Dendermonde that I know. It's on the E17, it's actually off on to the east side of Ghent and the Race HQ hotels, actually in Ghent itself. It's based in wood around a small lake on the side of the E17. It literally is pull off the main road and you're in there. Now, the start finish is a main tarmac road with big turns, a couple of S-bends around the side of a wood onto a little hill. And I say it's a little hill. You've got basically a long off-camber right-hand turn. You come across a hill and drop straight off it through and round some trees. It's not very inspiring at that point. However, you go up onto the hill and then another turn and a really tricky turn off camber on the hills before running across underneath the bridge onto another little bump. And again, this is pretty straightforward on and off. And then back over the bridge, back onto the same hill again, come back in over the hurdles, round the edge of the wood, and then a long straight into a 90-degree turn onto the finishing straight. It is a typical Belgian cross. It is not going to be any difference. And to be honest, it's all about the subtlety. Everybody knows that you can change a course by moving a post 6 inches, 20 centimetres, post moved in or out on the course will make a massive difference to how that corner feels, how the ride is, how it races. And I think for me, that's what's going to be interesting here. A rider actually made the comment at Essen, it's like the organisers had too many posts, so they just kept on putting them in for all these turns. It'll be interesting to see what they do at Dendermonde. It has been used before as an ambience cross. However, when it comes to doing a World Cup, people usually do put little changes to make it a little bit tougher. They maybe widen it out. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that rides. I think what's going to be critical is to be on Facebook, to be on the net in the 2 or 3 days before to see what the course conditions are. Because I think if it is muddy, we're going to see very similar races and very similar winners to the last two races. There's nothing as extreme as Herentals, but it is definitely somewhere between Herentals and Essen in how it's going to feel when it's being raced. So let's see how that pans out in the days before. That's going to be critical for me. I think we're a little bit too far out at the moment to call who's going to be winning and losing at that point.
I think we don't know much about the course. There's very, very little to find about the details of it. I'm looking at it as being a surprise present that comes the day after Boxing Day. You discover an extra present under the tree a couple of days later and think, oh, this is really exciting, I'm going to unwrap it, and it might be something which is absolutely amazing, or it might be something that was a bit disappointing. I think Dendermonde is going to be just like that. We don't know what it's going to be like, really, until we see it. But it's always nice to go to a new venue. I think there's a question of who is going to actually be able to travel over, looking at it from the UK perspective. There's a real issue, actually, a significant problem for British riders this year. And it's the practicalities of getting the COVID tests. You have to have a COVID test within a certain number of hours before you arrive on site. And bearing in mind the travel disruption that we've had because of the new strain of coronavirus, it means that people haven't been able to travel out earlier than they perhaps would have liked to have done. So that means they have to get their COVID tests here in the UK, and you cannot get them because of the Christmas break. So I know there are some riders, and I really feel for them. Yeah, it's true for so many, where you can be selected for things, but for practical reasons, it's not only the race cancellations, but for practical reasons, it's just impossible to make the logistics work. So there are riders who they cannot get across the channel.
And speaking of logistics, it's worth bearing in mind, check your timings for the races. I have heard on the grapevine that Houston Zolder is going to be pushed earlier to allow riders to travel across to Dendermonde with more time. So watch your timings, guys. If you're going to be watching live, make sure that you've checked the timings of the TV, because I think there is race scheduling at the moment is very fluid and dynamic, a bit like we said at the beginning of the show. It's not quite guerrilla timing, but they are changing, and there are press releases coming out literally as we're recording the show, I think, telling us that we're going to get some changes to the race timings to allow riders to move across. So watch the website, so keep your eye on that. And remember, like we say with cross, it's all about that, those subtle differences. Who's ridden the day before? Who is travelling by plane? Who's going in a camper van? Who's driving? Who's got the pre-race? Whose course is local? Wout van Aert on a local course for him winning in Herentals. It can make a huge difference to a rider. So I think logistics this year playing a massive part, and UK riders getting tested, it's tough. You know, getting across what is a sealed border due to new strains of virus. And we said people have to be fluid and dynamic. I think it's going to play into the hands of anybody who did stay out and didn't come home for Christmas, which is tough stuff. And speaking of Christmas, we must be heading in to Christmas Eve ride, Neil. It must be nearly time.
It's gone time. Yeah, I should be out, otherwise I won't be back. So I'm going to have to, my festive 500 is going to take a hit today. But yeah, so we need to wrap up so I can see the finish line ahead. So we will be out on the bikes over the next few days. Hopefully we'll be catching up with the Donny Chain gang. Those people who see this as a mystery, this is a Zwift group ride that Matt does commentary for, so you kind of log in on YouTube and you'll get a really I love it, actually. I've only joined in over the past few weeks, but really enjoy having familiar voice talking us through what ends up being a tough hour and a half on the turbo.
I'm surprised by how well you did, Neil. I'm very impressed, I must admit. And for me, the biggest thing is the Donny Chain Gang, the legendary chain gang in the UK, in the tough mining town of Doncaster, has translated into a ride which is kept together and everybody looks after each other for the first half, and then it's ripped up by everybody, including lots and lots of pro riders and, you know, national champions. We have Stephen De Jong on there. We've had everybody right the way through to people like legends like Malcolm Elliott. All these guys, Ben Swift, national champs on there. Everyone's riding together as mates, and then the moment that the go-go goes, everybody rips the living daylights out and everybody's poorly afterwards because they've given it so much. But then they're all mates afterwards and they're all comparing notes afterwards and come back and you're straight back again. And I think for me, if something good's come out of it, it is Russ and I who put that on. It's put a real community, and it's almost, not quite, almost cyclocross community-like back on the Facebook pages of the Donny Chain Gang and the DCG. It's not quite as good as Cross. Cross is always going to beat that because it's outdoors and it's muddy, but it's a close second.
That is exactly right. And it gives you a nice bit of rhythm to the week, you know, that when you've got that normal, the smash yourself up at the weekends type of normal in the Cross, but then that can't happen. It's like, okay, Tuesday night, then it is. So, yeah, I've been enjoying that. We need to wrap up. Have a great Christmas, everyone, or I hope that you've had a good Christmas if you're hearing this, listen to this afterwards. You can find us on the internet. You can find me at Crosscast Neil. Matt, where can we find you?
You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, at Matt Fixer Payne, and of course you can follow the action from the DCG, the Donny Chain Gang on the YouTube channel, Danny Cycling YouTube channel, and hear me there as well.
Great. We'll be back with you in a few days, possibly. We'll be back with you in a few weeks.
Let's be optimistic. Racing's going to run fine and it's all going to be nailed together. You never know, we might have managed to leave a Bruce out from whichever camera he's hiding behind.
We'll be back with you when we can. Until then, we'll see you on the other side of the tent. Bye.